And behold, the lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? He said to him, What is written in the law? How do you read it? And he answered, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, You have answered right. Do this, and you will live. But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, And who is my neighbor? Jesus replied, A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion, and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he sent him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took off 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Which of these three do you think proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? He said, The one who showed mercy on him. And Jesus said to him, Go and do likewise.
Okay. Let's just review all the characters in this story. Who are the characters? Got a lawyer. Who else?
The robbers.
Got the robbers.
Levite.
The Levite.
Samaritan.
Samaritan.
The victim.
Victim,
innkeeper.
The innkeeper,
priest. And
priest, and Jesus. As you think about this story, who do you most identify with in the story? As you read the story, which person is you? And let's just,
Samaritan.
You identify with the Samaritan. And maybe just say a word about why. Let each person decide who they most identify with.
I don't know, I just said that and I don't know exactly why, but I'm going to have to think about this a little while, because I was going to say, in a way, I think I also identify with the victim, sort of, the person.
Do you feel victimized by being a Samaritan?
Could be.
Because that's it.
I think it's most comfortable to, you know, identify with the good guy in the story, the hero.
Yeah, that's probably good.
You know, I mean, we'd like to think that we're not one of those guys who just...
So do you identify with the Samaritan too as you read the story?
Well, I'd like to, you know, I mean, certainly not going to claim to be one of those bad characters. I mean, it's as much a desire as it is a real, perhaps a reality.
How about you? Who do you identify with?
Me? I don't know.
I was just going to read the story again.
I identify with the priest as I look at our third question. I guess I can identify with each or several of the others as I look at the other questions, the times I've been dealt with compassionately or have dealt. But
so when you thought about that third question, the time that you were presented that you weren't able to deal with,
I walked by.
How about others of you, when you thought of that situation, when you were presented with a situation that was calling you to some kind of action or some kind of involvement, and you weren't able to do that? What was happening? Why weren't you able? In the situation that you thought of, for example, what got in the way?
Fear, not wanting to take on more than I could handle. that kind of fear, not the fear that I couldn't relate, but not wanting to spend the energy, having my own agenda, and wanting to take care of that as opposed to that other person's need.
So in that time, you can kind of identify with the priest or the Levite that was on their way doing something. How about other people who thought of, in that third example and the questions I gave you when you felt like you couldn't respond, what were the reasons? What was getting in the way?
I think in the story, I related to a Samaritan. I spend my life taking care of people that are half dead. And so I identified with him, but I also identified with the priest and the Levite because there's plenty that gets in our way of being Samaritans. I think in my experience, I'm a Levite a lot more often than I'm a Samaritan, even though I have lots of opportunities to be a Samaritan. And the thing that stands in the way the most isn't so much fear of doing it. I think what really stands in the way more is time. Mm-hmm. I just don't have time. And I don't have the kind of the time to empty out myself to everybody. You just can't.
Yeah.
Time used to be a factor. If I had the time, if I didn't have a family, if I didn't have other constraints, I'd be a Samaritan more often than I am. Mm-hmm.
We got into talking about how difficult it's to know the right response. That there are times that either maybe you can feel tremendous compassion, but maybe you don't know the person quite well enough to minister to them in a real direct way. Like in the last year, we've had several people that we know as acquaintances who have had just horrendous things happen. And you try to figure out what would be the compassionate thing to do. And sometimes it almost feels like you could be invasive. You could be unfeeling by assuming that they wanted to be approached without a prior relationship. At that point, what they need in some cases is for people they really don't have to create a relationship with.
So sometimes what gets in the way is just simply trying to get a reading of a situation, whether it's appropriate to be involved or not.
Yeah.
I think what gets in the way more often, say on social issues and things like that, is actually when you really think about it, it's more being afraid to hang yourself out there, and more wanting to protect your image, your self-esteem.
Could you give an example of that for yourself?
Well, I think dealing with dealing with poor people and homeless people that we see on our streets all the time. You walk right by them. You don't. There's plenty of opportunity right a few blocks away from our church to get involved with homeless people and stuff. And you don't, because you kind of leave it up to the social agencies. It's just kind of not the thing for you to do.
Sure. Okay. Others of you, do you identify with any specific character in the story more than the others? I raise it in the way that I do because in my own experience, the way that this parable was taught to me, meaning in Sunday school and in church, was it seemed like I had two options. One option was to kind of wrap myself in self-righteousness and say, I did some really nice things for Miss Jones who lives down the street, or and I'm a good Samaritan. So a kind of self-righteousness, or just being overwhelmed with guilt about how I'm just one of the worthless characters in here. I'm a priest and a Levite, and I go by the other side of the road, and then being immobilized by that guilt. And I think if we pose this parable in terms of good and bad, the good Samaritan, we miss out on some of the point of the parable, which is that we, I think, are all the characters in the story. And we're capable, Jesus tells us, we're capable of being compassionate and we're capable of not. And that one of the things that the parable encourages us to do is to think about, what is it that enables us to be compassionate? What do we need? What kind of community? What kind of base of support? And what are the personal obstacles that get in the way, whether it be time, or maybe even what are some of the social obstacles that get in the way of being compassionate? I can think of an example in my own history of when I was in Ethiopia, and I could also say this about inner city Chicago, and I literally pretty much depleted my resources, giving them, trying to meet individual needs, to the point where I emotionally couldn't cope anymore, so I would just start crossing to the other side of the road. I mean, I was literally the priest and the Levite, because I couldn't handle it anymore, and I didn't know what to do. And it was clear that some kinds of structural changes needed to happen, and that I felt limited as to what I could do. So I think the parable is inviting us to think about how we're each of the characters. Let's do it one more time. And we don't have enough. This is better if we had a lot of people, so we're going to do this in a little different way than I normally do. But let's read the story, and then I'm going to invite us to assume the role of each of the characters in this story and talk about what, for example, will become the lawyer. Why are we asking this question, Jesus? What did we really want? Were we really interested in the answer, or were we not? What were we doing? So let's read it again carefully, and then we'll try to live through it through the eyes of each of the characters. Someone willing to read it again?
And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, What is written in the law? How do you read? And he answered, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself. He said to him, You have answered right. Do this and you will live. But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, And who is my neighbor? Jesus replied, A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion, and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he sent him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Which of these 3 do you think proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? He said, The one who showed mercy on him. And Jesus said to him, Go and do likewise.
Okay, we're the lawyer. Why did we ask this question? What are we trying to get at?
I think we want to limit the things that we probably have to do.
About rules. The Jews always wanted nice, neat rules. They didn't want stuff from the heart. They wanted it. Yeah.
Well, I'm asking a question because I think I know the answer. I just want Jesus to tell me, then I'm going to feel smart.
You just want what?
I want Jesus to tell me the answer that I already know, and then I'll feel smart.
Why does he say then, in order to justify himself? Because in a way, what you feel like is that Jesus has given him the chance to give the answer, and then Jesus has said, you're right. So in a way, he's already gotten it.
But he goes a step further.
But he goes a step further, so there's something else he wants. Uh-huh.
I'm really smart, maybe.
Maybe.
You want to put Jesus on the spot, I think.
Uh-huh.
That's the best.
Keep in mind, Jesus has been doing a lot of preaching, and there's a lot of people who are trying to attract Jesus, so that's another possibility, trying to really...
He may really want to get a little... that times equivalent of media exposure too. Who knows how many people are around at this time?
Kind of showing up.
Yeah, and so here, you know, he didn't get Jesus to trip up on the first one. Jesus put him on the spot, and now he's putting Jesus on the spot. And wouldn't it be neat if he could make Jesus stumble?
Maybe this would be good for my law practice. I'll impress all these people by really nailing this guy who thinks he knows what's going on.
How were lawyers then different from today? You know, what's the historical background to the lawyer there?
Lawyers were kind of a mixture of teachers, but they were also, they were the defenders of people in the court. So they would have a somewhat similar role. I mean, they would be accusers, and they would be somewhat similar ways as lawyers.
They certainly would know the Jewish law.
Yes. Have any of you had an experience that I've had where I've asked a question, in this particular case I'm thinking of, that was a very sincere question, but I wasn't prepared for where the answers led? I'll give you my personal example. Probably the last 15 or so years, I've been wrestling with a question that I started with 15 years ago, which was, why are people hungry? And that question came to me in a very, very painful ways of working in inner city Chicago, of traveling in India and Ethiopia and a number of places. But when I asked that question, I had no idea it was going to transform my life. I had no idea it was going to bring me into wrestling with questions of U.S. foreign policy, militarism, the way the international economy is structured, my own lifestyle, all those things. And there may be a sense in which the lawyer is asking what he thinks is a pretty safe question, but maybe he wasn't prepared for the answer. And I wonder if sometimes we approach God in that way, that we pose questions, but when the answers don't, we come back in ways that kind of break open our lives. That's hard. Any other comment about the lawyer? No? If not, let's move on. What do you think Jesus is trying to accomplish? Why does Jesus respond in the way that he does? Now again, it's a role play. You become Jesus. What are you doing here? Why did you respond to this lawyer in the way that you did?
Trying to teach some profound truths, you know, about what one's expected if you're aspiring to be in the kingdom of God, you know,
that truth in this? What profound truth did you want to communicate to this lawyer?
Well, that you're supposed to respond to needs. As Christians, we're called to be compassionate. Where you see needs, you're supposed to make yourself available, even if it isn't real convenient or nice and neat and clean and even if it's going to cost you something, in this case, money, prestige, for a Samaritan to have dealings with a Jew, it wouldn't be as bad as the other way around, but it's still, in a cultural context, it would be somewhat uncomfortable, I think. I think Samaritans probably didn't have much more use for Jews than Jews did for Samaritans.
Right. There's a lot of conflict, and historically that conflict is that the Jews saw themselves as being faithful throughout their history, including during the times of exile, and that they maintained, they would say, kind of their purity and their integrity, and even their racial purity for the most part. And they accused the Samaritans when, I believe it was, Israel was conquered, I think in about 722 BC by the Assyrians. The Assyrians then sent in colonists into the area of Babylonia, and they accused the Samaritans of being basically mixed blood with Syrians and other colonists. And so there's a lot of racial hatred and tensions between the two groups.
I think the other thing that Jesus was accomplishing here was that, if you're going to be a revolutionary, and you're face-to-face with the establishment, which is what this lawyer represented, you got to show them, first of all, that you know the book first, that you're not coming off the wall, uneducated in what they know. I think he had it, first of all. His message was going a step further than what this guy was used to, and he had to show him and maybe whoever else was around, first of all, that he knew the basics first, and then he took the basics a little step further. Mm-hmm. I think that's really what he was doing, and I think he probably was leading a lawyer on into this. He knew this guy was going to keep after him, and because he wanted to see really how well he really did know the basics. And I think that's what he's really doing.
Okay. Anybody else comment about Jesus?
Well, though the lawyer was asking with mixed motives, a lot of he was testing. And maybe the sincerity of the question wasn't there to begin with. I believe Jesus took him very seriously or respected the question. As we've said in different ways, he took him into a depth response as opposed to a surface response.
Good. Okay, how about as priests and Levites? Here we are, we're priests and Levites. Priests and Levites were under the law required by law to help a victim. And yet we walk by on the other side. What's going on? Why did we do that?
Who exactly was a Levite again?
I can't tell you exactly, but they were basically members of the religious elite. They were kind of the temple assistants.
Worship leaders.
Were they considered sort of laity? Though?
No, they'd
be clergy too, but different from the priest.
Right. Mm-hmm. They'd be a little bit of a lower status than the priest, I guess.
Passing by on the other side of the street, is that to distance yourself from that person, so it's sort of a saying that person isn't worthy of my notice, I'm only going to minister to those people who are of the same faith, or is it pretending you don't see it? It might be
any of those things. We're not told in the story that the victim is other than a Jew. I mean, it could be the victim.
Yeah.
So, but it could be, any of those things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is speculation, but it's just trying to get us into the frame of mind of.
I think they're just human beings. Everyone, more or less, makes a mistake.
Again, I can think of examples in my own life where I've literally crossed to the other side of the street because for one reason or another, I simply could not cope with what I was confronting.
But you don't get the impression here that it's because we've got an overload of dishing out compassion. It's more sort of a superiority error, this racism sort of thing, don't you think?
But this is a very realistic scene, by the way, because many of the priests who worked in Jerusalem lived in Jericho. And Jericho is down quite a ways. It's a fairly hefty walk to get there. So this would be a daily route for many priests and Levites who would be traveling on their way home. So it's not an unusual experience. Now, whether it was an unusual experience to have someone, there were robberies along this road. So it's
could be that a wife had supper waiting, and the person was looking at was it really fair to keep the whole family waiting for, you know. I think those are the sorts of things.
Yeah, maybe he was on his way to a church service.
That he was in charge of, you know.
There was a, when I was in seminary, I don't think this was done at my seminary, but maybe it was, but it wasn't during the time I was there. There was a chapel service that was dealing, announced beforehand, was dealing with this parable of the Good Samaritan. And on the way, they had set up a victim who was clearly in need, and everybody walked right by on the way to not miss the
what
discussion.
Was the victim? I'm curious how this
I can't remember. I can't remember how it was set up. It was either someone who was clearly homeless or someone who was playing the part of a street person or whatever.
I mean, but he's laying there bleeding, and that's pretty bad.
But it is, I mean, it's, I remember one time being caught with a car that wouldn't start. I had a hood up, I had jumper cables, and all I needed was someone just to stop for about 30 seconds and give me a jump. And this car came by, and I kind of flagged it down, and it rolled down the wind, and I said, could you please just help me for a minute? I just need a jump. He said, sorry, I'm late for church. I fell right out. Okay, let's move on here and let's talk. Go ahead.
55-kilometer ski race one time where a guy broke his leg and nobody would stop. Right by the side of the trail. Kind of broken femur, life threatening condition.
Yeah.
People wouldn't stop.
Could have been bleeding it.
It's funny, a couple times that I can remember in my life when I look back and I realize that I really had a responsibility to act, it's kind of like your subconscious turns off your ability to respond. We once had a friend who developed melanoma, and we moved away. We sort of forgot about it for a few months when we moved away. And it was like our subconscious turned it off. We couldn't handle it. And I was helping in a state hospital one time when our oldest was really young and a lot was going on with our child at the time. But I helped this very catatonic lady and started involving her in our life. And then suddenly when we started having problems, I just forgot about her for about a year. And it was like I had no, like it, my subconscious did it to me too, you know. Which I suppose is what, sort of what you're saying about the overall too. It's like you just,
yeah.
And afterwards, it even makes you feel guiltier because you think, boy, I didn't even feel guilty about that at the time.
You also, you used the term earlier that was applied to the priest and the Levite, and that was that they crossed over to the other side of the road. Okay, we don't have a lot of time to talk about this, but I think crossing over to the other side of the road is a good metaphor for us too, of ways that we can think about what are ways that we cross over to the other side of the road. And I think of suburban developments, you know, that we in general, in the class of people that we come from, we have the economic power to cross over to the other side of the road, where we don't have to deal with the carnage of U.S. policy in El Salvador as a daily thing. We have to make a choice to do that. So there's all kinds of ways, or labeling people that we don't like as communists is a method of crossing over to the other side of the road. It cuts us off from their humanity. And I think part of this parable is to say that we've got to get past those. Okay, let's think just briefly about, let's think of ourselves as robbers. Why did we rob this person? Did any of you associate yourself with the people, the robbers? I've had a few people do that in thinking about in the context of the victims who live far from our, either in inner cities or in Central America or whatever, being that we in fact are robbing them of their rights, but very few. But what do we think about the robbers? You know, obviously maybe it was just greed, and they saw that they could just pounce on this person and run off with a few dollars. Or maybe it was desperation. Who knows? Maybe it was a supported drug habit. There's all kinds of options for that.
Yeah, I think personally it's hard to identify with that idea of being a robber, because probably none of us have had that experience of personal cases of being framed. But for myself, I felt that way as part of a bigger policy, you know, when I, you know, part of a bigger U.S. foreign policy, when I get upset about, you know, maybe like our role at the conference or something, then I feel part of that, and I don't feel good about helping fund the government that does things in my name and other group. So, in more of an impersonal way, I guess I could identify with that.
Right. But it's hard for us to make that identification, because most of us don't. We don't rob our neighbors. We don't rob in order to feed ourselves. We don't steal from other people. I think about one statistic that I've heard from, I thought it was when Barry was talking about the debt crisis last night in his briefing before dinner, that the way that the international trading system is, it functions, doesn't work very well for poor countries. And one example I have of that is that in 1970, Nicaragua would export 100 bags of coffee, and it would import with the value of that 100 barrels of oil. So it was a one-for-one trade, one huge bag of coffee for one barrel of oil. Just 12 years later, because of shifts in the international economy, they got 3 barrels of oil. So they lost, were robbed of 97% of the value of their principal export, which the foreign exchange of which means literally life and death for people. So again, if we can think about it in the context of taking a step beyond what we do as individuals, we obviously don't go out thugging around and robbing our neighbors. That can be a very important part of the passage, I think, is helping us think about those. Okay, I think in the interest of time, I'm going to stop here, but it's an interesting exercise, if you ever lead this with people, to try to put ourselves in the position of each of the characters, because I think we are capable, and are in fact, each of these characters at some point in our life. And the point of the parable is to help us think about what helps us here, what makes us compassionate, what blocks us, what prevents us from being compassionate. I would like, if you would bear with me, just to highlight 6 lessons that I take from this parable, and that I talk about in this book very briefly. The first I've already mentioned, and that is that this parable is not about being good or bad. It's a parable about compassion, and it's trying to get us to think of, again, about what enables us to be compassionate and what blocks compassion. A second lesson, I think, is that Jesus defines neighbor in a much broader category than the lawyer expected. The lawyer probably expected that neighbor was simply going to be responsibility for Jews. Other Jews who thought like him, lived like him, etc. And Jesus basically says, no, your neighbor is anyone who is in need. That's one definition of neighbor that Jesus uses. And that's consistent with other biblical passages. Anytime there is need, that has a claim on us as Christians. He also, that all victims are. But he also indicates that Samaritans are neighbors. Now, the equivalent in our society would probably be to tell this story about the good communist. When you think of the negative feelings that many U.S. people have, you throw that label around, it's the same kind of passionate hatred that existed between the Jews and the Samaritans. Kind of almost an irrational And Jesus tries to cut through that. Third lesson is that Jesus uses neighbor as a verb. The neighbor implies action on our part. In fact, one of the people in the Bible study at 8 said, I think correctly, that what Jesus does is he turns the idea of neighbor around and says, really, the neighbor in the story is the one who approaches the victim. That's the neighbor, which is an interesting way to look at it. So Jesus uses the term neighbor as a verb implying
action.
Yeah,
because he says, who proved neighbor?
Who proved neighbor to?
In the story, not who, which one is your neighbor.
Uh-huh. A fourth lesson, and again, this is related to another one, is that it's much easier to be compassionate to people who are like us. It's much easier to think about being compassionate even in our own neighborhoods. But if we see ourselves as part of a global family of God, it really expands our neighborhood. Our neighborhood is really the world. And it means being neighbors to people very different from us, people who speak different languages, people who have different cultures. People who sometimes can be very unpleasant, probably. So it expands, it asks us to be much more, I think, racially and culturally inclusive than we are. And I think, for me, I live in Minneapolis, and one of the hardest things for me about living in Minneapolis is that there are minorities, but we are extremely segregated in terms of our daily life. There is almost no interaction between blacks and whites. Native Americans and blacks, Native Americans and whites. And I think that that is a, in a way, kind of a condemnation that we are moving away from rather than towards the kingdom. And then a fifth lesson is that compassion is something that can't be legislated. That doesn't mean that laws are bad, but under the law, the priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan were all legally responsible for the care of that victim. They're all under a legal mandate to do so. And the priests and the Levites were considered the religious leaders of the day. It would be like our bishops and cardinals and pastors just walking by the other side. So the lesson seems to be that while laws may be useful, that there are many things in which we can even live by the letter of the law, but avoid any kind of compassionate relationship with others. And the sixth lesson I draw from this parable is that compassion is risky. And I can think of risky in a couple of ways. One is, it's very risky to open our hearts to the pain of others, whether that be the pain of a local neighbor, whether it be the pain of the people of El Salvador or Nicaragua. We need to risk wrenching our hearts and our lives open, and that's very difficult. But also compassion is risky physically. We hear stories of people stopping by to help someone, and they're a good Samaritan, and they get beat up or robbed. Or in a more general sense, we hear of people like Oscar Romero, the Bishop of El Salvador, who spoke out for the poor, who challenged his own government, who challenged the U.S. to stop sending military hardware to El Salvador, who in fact preached to the soldiers of his country to lay down their arms and obey the law of God rather than an unjust law. And he was assassinated. And he knew that he would be. And yet he had to live out faithfully. Just by way of the story, getting back to the story, it might be interesting for you to know that under the law, under Jewish law, we're told in the story that the person is half dead, the victim. If the priest or the Levite were to have gone in and tried to help this person, and the person would have died, then they would have had to go into seclusion. I think it was for at least a week or a couple of weeks under Jewish law. So they were risking interrupting their life, not just for a couple of minutes, but for at least a week. Now, if the priest in this story were a high priest, the laws regulating the activities of high priests at the time said that if that person who was half dead died, the high priest would have been barred from the priesthood for life. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the messages is that it's that compassion is risky. It means risking probably more than we're sometimes willing.
Mm. It'd be like if you were in this day and age, if you were faced with a situation where you had to give maybe artificial respiration, and that person might be an AIDS person, you know, and you were wondering, gee, do I try to save him because maybe it'll be my death, you know?
Or maybe it's that you're a doctor and you're afraid of, or just an individual and you see someone in need and you're afraid to minister to them because they might sue you. Something went wrong. I mean, but it's risky. Or again, the example that I already gave, that Romero knew that to speak what he believed to be the truth in his country was very risky.
A lot of the doctors, haven't they changed that law?
I'm not sure. Have they?
Maybe some places have Good Samaritan.
They give them protection now.
Oh, that's right. They don't even call them Good Samaritans.
No, they don't.
What's that?
They don't.
They don't?
No.
Oh, I thought they could change it.
Well, there's...
If you stop on the highway and help somebody in an automobile accident, you're as soon as you enter into a contract helping the patient, you're liable.
Well, possibly some of the states have.
Except that the Constitution does not allow a person to be forced to waive their right to sue.
Uh-huh.
So laws that say a person can't sue someone is unconstitutional. Because the person is waiving
so
their
that's
right.
Another, I mean, it's another example of the kind of things that one would leave my way. The last thing that I would say about this parable is that I think it's important for us to imagine a situation of this Samaritan. We hold up the Samaritan, as I think we should, as an example for us of, you know, how might we be able to respond more as Samaritans and less as priests and Levites and others in this church who go by the wayside. But I think it would be well for us to also think about the question of what would happen if this Samaritan, say we are the Samaritans in this story, were to walk that same road 365 days for a year and each day come across a victim. Would we not find another route, or would we find a way of crossing over to the other side? And I raise that question in the context that I think the likelihood is that we would, and that there's a point at which I think we need to reach where we ask ourselves, why are the victims by the roadside? Because it gets us back to asking the unpleasant question that the lawyer started with and probably wasn't ready to have the answer that Jesus gave. Because I think when we start asking the questions, why are the victims by the roadside? Why are the refugees flowing into the United States? Why are they leaving El Salvador and Guatemala, etc.? Those get into rough questions. But eventually, we get led back into social responsibility, socially rooted compassion that obviously involves individual compassion, but in a sense takes it a step further.